Julie Crosby and Miriam Barnard. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Libby Rainey, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Ravi Karan, Hani Massoud, Trina Nadura, Tamaria Studio, Adriano Contreras, Maria Terracena. Special thanks to Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira. Happy birthday to Julia Thomas. And thank you so much to Becca Staley. I'm Amy.
And this is radio station WUSB. It's 6 o'clock, time for Off the Wall. Another edition of Off the Wall here on WUSB Stony Brook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to start the show and ask people to just breathe. Take a deep breath. Everybody just take a damn deep breath and try and just relax a little bit, feel calm, and know that we are going to get through this. We are going to emerge on the other side. Won't be tomorrow. Probably won't be next week. Maybe it won't even be next month, but we will get through this. And know this, too. Know that what we are going through right now, it's not just us. It's not just your neighbors or Long Island or New York or the United States. It's the whole world. It's the whole damn world. Fighting to survive, fighting against a common enemy, joining forces together. And we will get through this. We have to get through this. What we're seeing around us, I've heard this so many times, is unprecedented. It's like nothing that's ever happened before. But things like this have happened before. We're going to talk about that a little bit. And things like this will happen again. But know this. Know that you are not alone. And that we are all pulling for each other. And that's why we're doing this. That's why we're staying apart from each other. That's why we're staying indoors. That's why we're canceling everything that matters to us. Sacrificing so much so that more people don't get this deadly virus. Don't spread it to those people who are most susceptible. And that sacrifice is what's going to save us. That sacrifice is what's going to go such a long way. It's horrible. It's horrible what's going on, what people are being faced with. But there is going to be positive that comes out of this in the end. Because we'll see the power of what we can do if we do it together. If we stand up for each other, if we protect each other, if we use our brains. There isn't anything we can't do. So, for the next hour, or 53 minutes, until Finn comes in, and he is coming in, he's on a train. Wow. For that next period of time, we are here. We're here for you. We'll take your phone calls, try to answer any questions, and also try to provide some facts, try to provide some experiences and observations. Because on top of all of this, what we are seeing now is something that none of us have ever seen before and probably none of us will ever see again. So let's notice every little detail. Let's share our experiences. Let's not let this opportunity, and I do use that phrase sincerely. It's an opportunity to study who we are, how we react, how the world reacts, how the planet reacts. Have you looked outside? It's quiet, and it's somehow seems less polluted. In fact, I noticed that. We talked about this in previous weeks. There was a cloud over China that disappeared. And I don't know if it's come back since they've improved things over there quite a bit. But I think the short-term effects of cutting down on greenhouse gases and long-haul flights, which are pretty much canceled everywhere now, it will have an effect. Not a long-term effect, and of course it'll go away once we all go back to our lives, but for now it is having an effect, and we can study that. We can learn something from that. We can see, does immediate action on a massive scale, something we never could have imagined accomplishing before, can that actually have a perceivable effect? Hey, it's our opportunity to find out. And we've got nothing but time. So let's get to it and learn. I'm sorry, Kyle. I've been hogging the microphone. You've been cleaning up the studio, which is great. Spraying down all the equipment, and that is so important. We have a skeleton staff here at the radio station. We're encouraging people not to come in unless they want to do an on-air shift. And if they do an on-air shift, they have to maintain space. They have to clean. They have to observe safe protocols. Right now, we're wearing rubber gloves. Are these rubber?
Nitrile.
What?
It's like a synthetic non-latex.
Okay, well, it's
barrier.
It's good. I've got these really tight gloves on, so those are protecting my hands, keeping me from scratching my face or touching my face. And people, you always should try not to do that. Try not to to touch your face. I mean, unless you've just washed your hands, and then it's okay because you just wash your damn hands. But the idea is for you not to use the pads of your fingers to touch things like buttons or doorknobs that are out in the open that other people might have touched. And if you do, wash your hands immediately. But whenever possible, touch things with your knuckles instead, because that's a lot safer and less prone to being transmitted and breathed in by you. That's how this thing spreads. It's tough. You got to remember a lot of things, but you know, if you're careful and if you only go out when it's absolutely necessary, then you'll get through this without it affecting you. And we hear a lot about how people are getting this virus and surviving it. And that's great. But if you get this virus, while you might be fine, the person next to you who catches it from you might not be, or the person that they transmit it to. You see, it's that is the horror of this thing, is that it can affect so many people in really bad ways, and you don't even know you're spreading it around. If you don't take these precautions, it's almost a guarantee that that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's kind of a genius of evolution that it can do that, that it evolves to be something that isn't noticed and thus persist and spread.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how viruses work. And my reaction sort of to what you had started with is really just how humbling it is when you step back from the sort of globalized and really hyper personal and hyper social activity. A lot of the disease transmission and stuff that we were sort of okay with before, or at least not okay with, but like just viewed it as a cost of doing business, right? But when it has proven to be something a little bit different and we change that those costs become way too high, because they jeopardize the ability of those businesses to function. Because if you don't have healthy people, all of the things, all those mechanisms don't persist. They can't be sustained without the humans behind it. And mm-hmm. So I just think it's really humbling that ordinarily we'd be sort of let a fair amount of transmission and so on go forth, just viewing it as something that is a sort of casualty of how globalized we are. But when those, especially biological phenomena, when they become more persistent
mm-hmm.
and more contagious like this, we step away. And that's the real beauty of what's happening right at this moment, is that we've agreed collectively that we're going to change our behavior. And it's massive, like you said, just a global, really amazing undertaking. But we have to do it. We have to do it if we're going to maintain our numbers. And it's what we can do. We're not at the effect of this. We have agency as individuals and as a society. And I think we need to listen to one another and share information and make sure everyone is well and not left behind.
If you look at the places where this has really had a catastrophic impact on people, it's those places where it wasn't taken seriously enough until it was really, I don't want to say too late, but really obvious that, wow, this is something huge. And of course, the early days in China wasn't taken seriously enough. And probably the whole thing could have been nipped in the bud. Maybe not. Who knows? Italy, a lot of people stayed outside, hung out in squares and congregated. And they have not the best healthcare system there. So they were overwhelmed quickly. And that's another factor. And I worry about what's going on here. We're hearing a lot of reports about failings and delays and denials and a lot of garbage. I don't want to get into that. I don't want to be demonizing people today. But there will come a day, though, when people are called to account for not being there at the critical moments, for taking too long to take something seriously. I do want to give credit. I do want to give credit that I've been watching the press conferences, or all the press conferences, the city, state, federal. And I really feel a sense of pride watching de Blasio and watching Cuomo giving updates, because they are right there, especially Cuomo. He is just so involved and accepting the responsibility, accepting the blame when that is necessary.
He literally said, blame me today.
Yeah. For if you're upset at things being closed, blame me. I did it. My decision. That's what we need. We need somebody who says things like that. And, you know, if we had that on the federal level, wow, you know, we would be so much further along right now. Again, I don't want to get into it. But this is why leadership matters. This is why government is important. You need government to step up right now. We are all going to lose a ton because of this. Hell, what we work for may very well disappear. It may go out of business. It's entirely possible, because this is something that is unsustainable for so many. We're going to see all kinds of tragic outcomes because of this, not just on the health front.
The human toll, but social.
For that, though, you need a system in place to help people in those situations. Nobody should be paying rent this month. Nobody. Because, you know, if you don't have a job to go to, or if you're not getting paid for the things that you're supposed to be doing, how are you supposed to be paying a landlord someplace? I'm talking about businesses. I'm talking about people. That should just not be even an issue. You know, things grind to a halt. Well, so do paying the bills. That grinds to a halt, too. It has to. Why should you be the only one to be shouldering the burden? So that is what we should be talking about right now, is, okay, we're going to hit the pause button. Let's hit the pause button and resume this thing when it's over. You know, when we can walk outside again and resume our jobs, if they're still there, that's when we can resume paying our bills. Let's not push people into bankruptcy. Let's not make even more stress the reality for people's lives. That is what you need government for, to step up in situations like that. And I'm good. I'm happy to see that. I hope wherever you are, you're seeing the same things. Although I imagine most of our listeners are probably local, which is exactly how it should be. Times like this, you need local radio, and we're local radio. You know, you can't cut us off. You can't lose your bandwidth. You can't even lose your electricity, because radios work with batteries. You know, you could always turn on the damn radio and hear a signal. So I hope everybody has an outlet in their community so that they can hear local information. That's so important. And also have a chance to be heard. And that's what I'd like to open up for people throughout the rest of this hour. If anyone is out there, has questions, concerns, 631-632-9872.
Radio's actually
631-632-WUSB is what that spells.
Radio's actually perfect for this scenario, because it's both individual but also collective.
Mm-hmm.
We all listen, we all share, and especially with telecommunications, we can all speak.
Yeah, exactly. It's so important to have that infrastructure in place.
We're alone together.
I don't know, Kyle. How much crazier do you think it's going to get?
I've kind of bottomed out as far as my disbelief, and I was well suited to that, I think, in the last couple of years at various things. I mean, I'm done being astonished. How much crazier is it going to be? I think that we all need to prepare ourselves for really, really high numbers. And that's kind of scary, but it's also a reason to prepare mentally, but also be, you know, ready to see some of that tragedy, but also double down on the steps we're already taking and continue to listen to one another. And as you said, observe behavior, listen to officials and how they've changed their posture as they get more information and more data. But I think that's something that is approaching, and we need to support the system that people will rely on when there are numbers like that. I'm also sort of scared, I think, a little nervous, really anxious.
We all are about the unknown. Everybody is, though. That's the thing we need to all remember, is that we're all scared. We all don't know how this is going to work out and when.
Well, mainly because I don't have an answer to your question. How crazy? I don't know. I mean, and that alone is it's pretty terrifying. There's, you know, I want to, you take in every bit of information and stuff you're being told and so on. And you hope, the hope is that there is enough trust there. And I think there is trust in New York State and locally and to a degree on the federal level and globally. I think what we're seeing is a lot more of the kind of collaboration and coordination that we all expect, not just here in America, but around the world, whether it's on your continent or someone else's continent or in your neighborhood or your backyard. And I think that it's heartening, and it's going to be an ongoing thing to continue to have that trust. But I will say at the federal level, there has been a lot less personality and a lot more solidarity, which I think is impressive. And
finally,
from the president, a little more humanizing and hubris, right? Hubris,
well, someone smacked him upside the head, because I think he finally is getting it now. And that's what we need. We need to see that.
He also is stepping back and letting people speak and deferring.
Well,
because
but you know what, Kyle? He still calls it the Chinese virus. And I am so intolerant of that kind of intolerance.
You know, the heaping...
I swear to God, that's not intolerant. It's just pure out racism.
The heaping, stinking pile of hot garbage. Mike Pompeo keeps saying that.
He does, too. They all do.
And it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, we said we weren't going to get into this because there's other more important things to get into, but there'll be a day of reckoning. Let's just...
Yeah,
make that promise.
We can talk all about vaccines and science denial.
I want to bring something up, though, because a lot of people are mentioning the flu pandemic from 1918. And a lot of people also don't know about the flu pandemic from 1918. Do you know about this? There was a flu outbreak. It lasted a couple of years. And it killed around – it's hard to say exactly how many people it killed, because it happened around the same time as World War One, and there was a whole lot of death and destruction, and – it's hard to give credit to the right people for the right ones, but they estimate around 50 million people died from this flu pandemic in 1918. And that's in the world. And that's equivalent to around 200 million today. I mean, that's a hell of a lot of people. In this country, we lost over 500,000 people. About 600,000, I believe, was the death toll in the United States. It spread to every part of the world, affecting populations from Japan, Argentina, Germany, everywhere. The alarming thing about that flu pandemic is that a majority of those killed by the disease were people in their 20s, 30s, 40s. Not older people who were weakened by other medical conditions.
Well, were older people really that prevalent?
Yeah, they were. And the reason they say that that this was the case was because they had built up antibodies over the years for other similar flus. And they were able to withstand this one. Now, this flu pandemic came in two stages. It basically started out remarkably similar to what we're seeing right now. And then it came back. There was a second wave later in the year, the deadly wave. And that was the one that people were simply not prepared for. So, yeah, that is something that will scare the crap out of you. It might also hammer into your head the fact that we have to take this seriously and keep it from spreading. But there are so many differences, and you should not think that we are on the same path, because we're not. We live in a different society, a different culture, a different world from 1918. We have things that we did not have before. I mean, there you saw the same hoarding, the same panicking, and some of the same restrictions as you did back in 1918. But the world was a very different place, even without World War I. Doctors knew viruses existed, but they had never seen one. There were no electron microscopes. The genetic material of viruses had not yet even been discovered. Today, researchers not only know how to isolate a virus, but they can find its genetic sequence, test antiviral drugs, and develop a vaccine. In 1918, it was impossible to test people with mild symptoms so they could self-quarantine. And it was nearly impossible to do contact tracing because the flu seemed to infect and panic entire cities and communities all at once. And there was almost no protective equipment for healthcare workers, and the supportive care of respirators that can be provided to people very ill with coronavirus didn't exist. So with a case fatality rate of at least 2.5%, that 1918 flu was far more deadly than ordinary flu. It was so infectious that it spread widely, which meant the number of deaths soared. Researchers believe, as I said, the 1918 flu spared older people because they had some immunity to it. They theorized decades earlier there had been a version of that virus, one that was not as lethal and spread like an ordinary flu. The older people living in 1918 would have been exposed to that less lethal flu and developed antibodies. And as for children who were also spared, most viral illnesses like measles and chickenpox are more deadly to young adults, which may explain why the youngest were spared. So there are differences, very, very big differences, and reasons why we should not expect anything like 1918 to happen. But something else to keep in mind, the number of people who have died so far of coronavirus in the United States is just under 100. Number of people who have died from seasonal flu in the United States so far is 20,000. And that's normal. That's normal. I said that we lost something like 600,000 people to the 1918 flu. In a normal year, we lose 60,000. So, terrible as it was only 10 times worse than normal. And those are the numbers. Yeah, be concerned. Don't panic.
Do you think we'd have those same numbers if we were as cautious? And that's kind of what I meant by the cost of business. And I think maybe in the future we'll rethink how we do things. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. The other thing I think that's really important is there is the reaction, that panic becoming a feedback loop where it strikes so quickly that people can't organize to protect and mitigate and contain and all of these things that we're very familiar with. So that's kind of a fundamental difference, but it's not really – it's a little bit of a byproduct of technological and other advances in our understanding of viruses and virology or whatever concepts we've gained over time. So, I think that is why it's best to prepare and not panic, because that gives us time to take practical steps. When people everywhere react, mm-hmm. you just transmit and it becomes more and more prevalent because people are freaking out and spreading this disease and not organizing and coming up with systems to and ways to approach it and take it on.
The best things you can do, listen to scientists. They know what's going on. You won't have cover-ups. You won't have politics. WHO.int is a website for the World Health Organization. CDC.gov, Centers for Disease Control. Those are the authoritative sources. Listen to what they have to say. And follow their advice, their guidelines. 631-632-9872. If you want to talk about this, talk about what you're doing. Doesn't have to be negative. There's a lot of positive things we can be doing. I know a lot of people are catching up on Netflix and doing all kinds of other things like reading and calling each other on the telephone. Imagine that. Yeah. And all of a sudden, brick and mortar stores are back in fashion. And people are discovering the simple things in life. It's not so bad, is it?
Yeah, doing your taxes seems
no,
like...
No, nice don't thing. Do your damn taxes. No. Oh. Ew.
Yeah, they might extend it. Right?
They better extend it, because I'm not going to be able to handle that. No. When things go back to normal, then I'll go back to normal with it. But for right now, it's cherishing life and doing those things that you were too busy to do. Now we all have a break, you know? If you have your family around you, then that's a great thing. They might annoy you. They will annoy you, but they're your family. And as long as you guys stick together, you'll be safe. And you'll be able to talk about this for many, many years to come. But the thing is, you know, we have to also notice what's going on. You know, one thing I notice is how quickly it all falls apart. I mean, watching the global stock markets, seeing how quickly everything collapses. Wow. That is something. It's like all those films you see, you know, where the world falls apart. Well, okay, the world's falling apart now. What do? How do we react? Okay, I'm trying to pick up the phone by using my knuckles. All right, I think I got it. And hold on, I have to hit the right buttons here. Oh, I used my finger. Ugh. But I'm wearing gloves, so I'm okay. Is somebody on the phone?
Hello, good evening.
Ah, good. I hit the right buttons with my knuckles for the most part. Where are you calling from?
This is Kirby. I'm calling from Etobicoke, which is Toronto, Canada.
Oh, wow. Okay. Hey, you're the museum guy, aren't you?
That's right.
Wow, this is the guy who plays our voices in the museums early on Sunday mornings when nobody is around and we're booming through all the hallways. That is awesome, Kirby. Thank you so much for that.
Not a problem. There's no museums today as... I basically called to give an update on my area, and everything is basically closing down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All of our museums, we've been told to do not approach. We've been told don't come back until you're told to come back.
Wow.
All of our stores, grocery stores, pharmacies are still open, but restaurants, bars, they've all been told to close. They can do a takeout or delivery service.
You know, they gave they made a ruling here that you can go to bars and get takeout drinks. I guess I don't know how that works, but that's something that is new here and it's meant to help the bar owner. So if you can find a bar that's open, apparently you can get a drink to go, which is awfully weird.
I was thinking growler fills. Yeah.
Growler fills might be nice too, but Kirby, how are people taking it up there?
I think they're taking it as with everywhere. Things happen quickly. It went from normalcy to the schools being announced. Last week, they announced they were going to close all the schools for 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then shortly after, everything else followed. And the obvious, you know, people started asking, what about the malls and so on and so on.
Uh-huh. Yeah, one by one, we seem to be losing those things that we're familiar with. Big events and then movie theaters and then stores of all sorts. And just keeps whittling down. You know, first you could hang out with 500 people. Then it was 100. Then it was 50. Now it's 10. It's really kind of sobering. But if it's having an effect, if it does what we want it to do, we will see the effects within a couple of weeks, I would imagine, if we can stop the spread of this thing. I think the sense of accomplishment might really be a positive that we all need.
Yeah, I agree. And I think we have about 100, 110 cases in Toronto currently.
Uh-huh.
And they're expecting that kind of exponential growth in the next, you know, coming couple of weeks. And they said, don't panic.
Right.
Because this is the cases from 2 weeks ago. The changes we're making are going to affect things 2 weeks in the future.
Yeah, that 14-day period, I think, was partly sort of an advent of how we approach viruses now. We learn how long they take to basically become contagious or to become active and so on. Those are tests I think they do, and that's where they get some of the criteria that we're now following.
How is testing by you? Is testing available?
As far as I know, there's not a major problem with testing, but as with everywhere, they're not testing unless it fits certain criteria.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think we're under a little bit of a luxury because we don't have nearly as many situations happening right now. So the testing, I don't think, has become an issue as of yet. I think we've tested 4,000 people now as of yesterday, I believe.
Uh-huh. It's slowly starting to ramp up here. I'm hearing 2,000 a day in New York City, I believe.
I think it'll be 5,000 by Thursday. The ability for 5 will begin Thursday, but that day they will not have the full capacity as they'll be ramping it up.
And they'll be adding some kind of drive-in testing facility out here in Suffolk County. So we'll of course provide information when we get that.
And there's going to be 5 in the city.
That's great. So. You know, it took long enough. It's now mid-March. This should have been happening in late January. I remember, you know, we were in your country. We were in Canada taking the train up to, Schefferville. And we were hearing reports of what was happening in China. And we were very concerned. And that was January. And it seems like the people in charge here didn't get it until this month. That's two critical months that we could have been doing so much. This all would have been unnecessary. It really would have been. And that goes for the rest of the world, too.
I remember sitting on that train, and one of the gentlemen sitting next to us, one of the parents, when we were going up to Schefferville, was just on his phone as the train was getting ready to leave. And I remember him sort of muttering or just sort of talking to himself like, oh, what's this, coronavirus?
Yep.
And just went off, you know, just as another thing he's reading and kind of remarked to his wife about it. And we've been following it ever since and hearing about it a little bit prior to that. But boy, has it taken center stage.
How are you doing personally?
Well, we're hunkered down here. I mean, I share the same anxiety as many as you were explaining before, the fear of the unknown. We figure we're pretty much in this position for months. Mm-hmm. I can't really see how something can quickly resolve this. And even if we wanted to, it could possibly create the situation again, right?
It's possible.
Yeah, what if it mutates?
Well, it's supposed to mutate. I'm going to get into that in a second. But there are things we shouldn't be afraid of, and a mutating virus is something we should not be afraid of. That is what they do. And it's very, very rare that it mutates into something even worse in this day and age when we have science and we can control things in lots of ways. We should be concerned, obviously, and we should be following all these guidelines. So are people – do you see any signs of panic up in Toronto? I mean, are they having runs on toilet paper up there like they are here?
Yeah, the same thing happened once the schools were closed, people kind of got the idea.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, the kids can't go to school, how come they can go anywhere else type thing. So there was a few days of extreme panic buying, and people got a little scared at seeing that and then panic buy even more and – we have a good distribution network, and a lot of things come from within Ontario or from locally, so we don't have a real issue with that at this point. And I think people realize that, and you know, there's nobody at the supermarket today. Like it's a normal kind of day.
Wait, you mean you could just walk into the supermarket, buy things, and leave, and not have to spend the whole day? Oh, that's great. Maybe that'll be the case here soon.
Yeah, I think
now I'm sure if you tried to go to Costco, you would find a different story. But
interesting,
that's a whole different ball game over there. But the local supermarket, there's sparse shelves in some departments, but there's plenty of food in other departments. So
yeah, I think people are getting the message that you should just take for yourself and leave stuff for others. Take what you need and allow what's available to be there for someone who really, really is in the store specifically to get that item. You know, it doesn't do anyone any good. And have faith, yes, that the distribution systems will replenish because there's a lot of businesses and people working really hard to make sure there isn't an interruption in critical supplies like that. Have you noticed any businesses doing anything unusual or to raise people's spirits or stepping up?
Business-wise, not so much, but locally, you know, there's a lot of little things. Today, somebody sent some emails around saying, you know, if you have a kid, put shamrocks in the window and kids can walk around the neighborhood like on a little hunt. You know, fun things just to try to raise the spirits of people and to let people know, you know, there's still people in the homes and so on and so on. But I think overall everybody's doing pretty well as they can. And I think that there's a positive feeling overall that, you know, this is what we have to do and we're just going to do it and to the best of our ability and try to do it so everybody can get through this together.
There are two concerns here in this country. One is that young people aren't taking it seriously enough because they're not feeling the effects of it. And the other is that older people aren't taking this seriously enough because most of them are Republicans and they think it's some kind of Democratic thing and they don't have to take it. I'm not making that up.
I know what you're saying.
Uh-huh. Do you see any sign of that in Canada?
Well, I think at this point, there's nowhere to go. So even if kids aren't taking it seriously, I mean, there's nowhere to, they can go hang out in a park together, but then that's fine because mm-hmm. then there's just a couple of them, right? There's
right.
no big outdoor space. You know, downtown is closed down. People aren't really riding the subway unless they absolutely have to. And they're just trying their best to limit activity. So personally, I've only seen small groups of people out and about. There's not a real rebellion in terms of this. Now, downtown's a little different probably because it's tight quarters and people, you know, they may have only very small space with many people. So that might be much more of a problem in different areas of the city.
I think there is a sense of a return to nature and simplicity and sort of different ways of spending time. Even virtually, like people are online and so forth. But if you imagine social media being basically everybody and everybody else's business, well, if everybody's sort of holed up in their house with like hand sanitizer, it makes for a very homogenous sort of social media environment. It's not like you're going to have FOMO of someone, you know, sneezing into their elbow in their bedroom. Like, it's kind of cool. We've seen a lot of people taking walks, just ordinary, go out, get some fresh air. And I think that's critical. That's just really important. And to appreciate spring. I mean, spring is here.
Damn it, spring is here. We didn't have winter. You guys had winter up there. It was canceled. Kyle's right. People are jogging on campus, and that's great. They keep being far away from each other. But there is nothing wrong with going outside and getting some fresh air. In fact, that is a good thing to do. And it's so quiet. I don't know if you've noticed that up in a city.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Yeah, things have just gotten really, really wound down. And it's kind of amazing on that level. I wish it was for better reasons, but maybe, you know, we'll learn something from this.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable. The steady sound of the big roads and stuff has just died down to a lull, and going around, walking around is an experience, and there's nothing wrong with walking around, so that's another thing. So mm-hmm. people are really taking advantage of it, as long as you don't go into a crowded space.
Exactly. And so few planes in the sky, too, so that's kind of nice as well.
Yeah.
Kirby, thank you so much for calling us, and please, I hope you get back to your museum in the near future, and we'd love to visit it someday.
Oh, you bet. And you guys take care, and we'll keep in touch.
All right. Thank you. Good night.
Bye-bye.
So one of our many listeners in the far-flung regions of the world.
So glad he called, as promised. That was really cool. Great to hear his voice. And
let's see who this is. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Yes.
Hello.
Hi. How you doing?
Well, how are you?
We're getting through it. It's, you know, it's nerve-wracking, and I think, you know, the emotional toil is going to start getting to us. People are going to have some some real anxieties. And you should know, you know, if you're one of those people out there, that's completely normal, and you're not alone. And we're going to get through this together.
Well, certainly, yeah. I'm calling you from Denver, Colorado, actually.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
How's it going out there?
It's been going. I think I'm at the acceptance phase of the grief cycle, so it's been okay. Everything here is pretty much shut down as well.
Yeah. People are taking it seriously, I hope.
Yes. Actually, I used to manage a bar, actually. We just shut it all down.
Uh-huh.
I was terrified and surprised by how many people are actually going out this weekend, and I made a decision to shutter before the government made us do that.
Uh-huh. That's a wise decision, but are people able to get the supplies they need?
Well, that's a funny story, actually. So, I want to say around this Friday, all the grocery stores were just empty. And then I had this amazing thought on Saturday afternoon to try some of the Asian grocery stores, and they were fully stocked.
Wow.
So I don't know if it was xenophobia or if it was people who didn't know that they existed, but that was where I was able to find my groceries.
That's brilliant. There are Asian supermarkets all around here, and I wonder, are people ignorant enough to avoid them, thinking that they're somehow contaminated? You might be able to find toilet paper in there. Wow, imagine that.
It was definitely a grocery hack for sure.
Uh-huh. That's brilliant. That is amazing. I didn't even think of that. We've been going to a lot of Chinese restaurants, you know, getting takeout from there. Always so happy to see us. And always so empty. It's tragic because that is totally not the thing to avoid in any way.
Yeah.
Right.
Any other observations from Denver?
I mean, I think people are just finally getting used to it. There's a whole bunch of people who don't have jobs right now. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking the government is going to have to do something because I can't see how unemployment's going to cover all of this.
No. They. I just heard a terrible story today about somebody. I think it was Marriott. They furloughed their workers, and one of those workers applied for unemployment. But guess what? When you're furloughed, you're not unemployed. You just are working a zero, what they call a zero-hour work week. So you still have a job, but you're just not getting paid, so you don't qualify for unemployment. We can't have things like that be normal or accepted. And yes, people are going to need a huge bailout, a huge show of support. And it's going to be painful, but it's also going to be an eye-opener. I think maybe we'll finally realize how broken our healthcare system is, and people will remember this.
Well, here's a funny thing about tipped employees as well that I found out. Apparently, with unemployment, tips are not counted as part of your income. So they're basically taking a bunch of people who used to make money through tips, and they're going to give them unemployment, but it's going to be the minimum wage. And so we know a lot of people can't live on that either.
Wow.
Right. So they're being assessed as making a lot less than ordinarily they would.
Exactly.
These kinds of things we have to – well, this is the place to air them. And we'll make sure that word is spread around all these injustices.
Yeah. And keep observing and sharing and discussing with people what you're seeing. And write us and call again. We'd love to get updates on how people are doing. And I guess it's really about finding moments to de-stress. I find listening to music really helpful.
Yes.
Cooking, I think, is something that a lot of people are enjoying, and that's helped me. I think helped a lot with anxiety.
Remember, there isn't a food shortage. There's not really a shortage of anything. And the only times, you see bare shelves is because people took everything. There are idiots who went around buying all the toilet paper, thinking they can make a huge profit of it. You'll see them on eBay now selling one roll of toilet paper for $3. That is what causes the problems, not the actual thing itself. So. We need to put ourselves together. We need to call those people out who do things like that, the irresponsible things that put us all in jeopardy.
Yeah, I think they've assessed $250,000 in fines so far for gouging.
That's just for the store owners that are doing things. And we should know who they are, too.
Yeah.
But there's also people who go out and they buy way too much more than – we got what we needed, and we're fine, and we're going to be fine.
Me, too. I only bought what I needed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, and we already had some stuff too, so we didn't have to buy that much. So if you always are keeping supplies, you'll be fine. And if you're not, you have neighbors, people who care about you. And if you're one of those people, look out for your neighbors. You know, look out for your relatives. Call people. Call somebody who's elderly, might be by themselves. Imagine if you're scared, how scared they might be. You know, so important and so therapeutic when you do something like that.
Well, absolutely. And a lot of us have a bunch of time on our hands. So I think there are a lot of great opportunities to step up and do something good.
Yes. Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Best of luck to you out there.
Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye. It's funny, both our calls have come from far away, Toronto and Denver.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're talking about how important local radio is, but I imagine it's just because people are transfixed. But let me just quickly point out, we were talking about mutation. This is Nathan Grubarg. He's an epidemiologist at the Yale School of Public Health. Had some things to say about that. We shouldn't worry when a virus mutates during disease outbreaks. The word mutation naturally conjures fears of unexpected and freakish changes, he says. In reality, mutations are a natural part of the virus life cycle and rarely impact outbreaks dramatically. RNA viruses, or those that have RNA as their main genetic material, instead of DNA, which includes SARS and includes this, they mutate constantly, and they don't have the mechanisms to fix those mistakes as human cells do. Most of these mutations negatively affect the virus, and if mutations are not beneficial to the virus, they're typically eliminated through natural selection, the mechanism of evolution whereby organisms better adapted to their environment tend to survive. Other mutations survive, and they get embedded into the average genome of a virus. Typically, multiple genes code for traits such as a virus's severity or ability to transmit to other people. Grubarg wrote, so for a virus to become more severe or transmit more easily, multiple genes would have to mutate. And despite high rates of mutation among viruses in general, it's unusual to find viruses that change their mode of transmission between humans over such short time scales. So don't worry about that. Mutation is normal. Let's try to squeeze in another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Oh, I hit the button at exactly the wrong time. It disconnected.
Yeah, that's really interesting. The sort of mutating itself is a part of the process, and maybe sort of evidence of that selection occurring, and it's sort of sputtering, not really sputtering, but I mean that's a little counterintuitive. I'm glad you shared that. That's cool.
This person called back. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Good evening, gentlemen. Bobson from Bulgaria. Here.
Bobson from Bulgaria. How are you doing out there?
Well, I'm fine. I've been spending a lot of time at home, not going out much.
Well, you know what? Everybody's doing that. But how is it being handled in Bulgaria? Do you have many cases?
Well, several dozen. I can look it up on the. Did you see that site that this kid from Washington State did, who collected the data and set up a live numbers site that gives you the details for all across various countries and all that?
We just actually heard about that on the preceding show,
Democracy Now.
They were doing a story on that, which we'll check out. We've been using John Hopkins.
Today's Democracy Now has the details.
Yeah. We've been using the John Hopkins dashboard, but I mean, it's, I think, so, essentially similar.
In Bulgaria, there were 67 so far confirmed cases, what they call, and of those, two are deceased, unfortunately. And there's another thing. There's also a number of recovered cases.
Yes.
In many places, but I looked into the paperwork that needs to go with this, and the confirmed cases only start 30 days after the recovered are only counted 30 days after they were confirmed as a carrier.
Okay.
There's the daily situation reports that WHO puts out, and in those reports there's details of how each country needs to report the cases to the WHO so they are counted. And I looked into that paperwork, and the paperwork for recovered cases is, well, nothing. You were confirmed as a carrier, but nothing happened to you in 30 days, so you're counted as a recovered. So that's why there's a delay in the number of recovered cases in various countries.
Interesting. Well, Bobson, you stay safe and follow the directions. Yeah, we'll all get through this together, but it's good to hear from you.
Well, right? The Parliament of Bulgaria declared a state of emergency on March the 13th to last until April the 13th, and so the only stores and businesses that are open are apothecaries and grocery stores.
All right. That's wise.
Which is, yeah.
That's basically the same thing as what's going on here. So, yeah, keep us updated. We'd love to hear from you again. And stay observant. See what's going on and let us know.
All right. Have a good night.
Stay safe.
Get some sleep.
I am getting every day some.
Yeah,
some
I guess you could probably get more now that everyone's inside. All right. We're going to try and take this one last call. Thank you for that. Let's see if we can fit this one in. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Oh, yeah. Hi.
Hi. Where are you calling from?
Calling from Greenpoint.
Okay, great. You're local.
Yes, and I have a question or a topic that I'd be interested in hearing you give some historical context to.
Sure.
Related to New York. So just before you came on the air, I thought, we need to freeze rent. And it was one of the first things you got into.
Uh-huh.
Is there any historical context in New York City of any sort of action like that at any point?
Well, I do know that in New York City they've frozen evictions. You cannot be kicked out during this crisis, which is a great move. But I'm not aware of anything beyond that involving rent collection, rent increase.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I think that needs to be frozen just out of humanity, and we need to look at this in the future how these things come about.
I think we're really close. I mean, a lot of the utilities, telecommunications providers, power, water, all of these sorts of critical services have, I think, signed up or come up with their own form of waiving any kind of disconnects over the next couple months, which they may extend further. So really, as you're pointing out, and what I'm hearing in the conversation is that rent's kind of the last piece of that, right?
For me, I was pacing anxiously around the apartment, and it clicked in. In a month from now, how am I going to pay this rent?
Yeah, you should not worry. You should not worry. And landlords out there, we're not being callous towards landlords. Landlords should be the recipient of whatever federal bailout there is to pay them for the rent that we can't afford to pay because of things totally out of our hands. And I think more people will get this as this situation develops. Greenport, though. Is it Greenport or Greenpoint?
Greenpoint, over here in Brooklyn.
Oh, you're in Brooklyn. Oh, you're not that local then. I thought you were Greenport. I was going to say, Greenport is where Brooklyn. That's where the first case in Suffolk County happens. But okay, I guess now. how are things? excuse me. How are things in Brooklyn?
Brooklyn's interesting. I think there's another topic that I would maybe be interested to get your insight into. That the sort of dynamics of the neighborhood have changed as the city's become more gentrified.
Uh-huh.
And I partially worry a little bit that community response, because the community is inherently more stratified and more gentrified, that there's more work to be done to get everybody in the neighborhood together.
Right.
And I just sort of wonder if that's something that you've given thought to as well, the sort of makeup of the neighborhoods.
Well, every neighborhood is different. I mean, that's something that you would certainly notice living there. I'm very curious. Do you notice people taking this seriously? A lot of younger people in your area, are they in fact following these guidelines?
For the first week or two, or about a week ago, it really seemed like everyone was callous and sort of flaunting it. And I saw people, packed in the cafes and throwing ironic COVID parties.
Wow,
that Rona.
I think it might be the millennials' way of coping with a great horror. It's to laugh in its face, but at the same time, it doesn't quite help the community.
No, not at all. And we need to all be. I just got a news story that coronavirus has now appeared in all 50 states. So that's a milestone right there. But no, I know the instinct, and we're guilty of it a bit ourselves because, we try and say, okay, we're smart enough to stand up to this thing. But with every passing day, we realize, I could be doing this better. I can be having more safeguards, avoiding this. I don't need to do that. We all need to get there. We all need to get there faster because it doesn't take many people for this thing to spiral out of control, and then you really have something that is horribly regrettable.
Certainly. All right. Well, thanks for what you're doing. I think that radio is really important at a time when people are all isolated right now.
I agree. I totally agree. Thank you for your call, and good luck to everybody out there in Brooklyn.
Yeah, thanks for being isolated with us.
We're out of time. I imagine Finn is here. We just haven't seen him. But regardless, we're supposed to keep our distance. It's going to be kind of weird, you know, and we'll have to sort of pass each other cautiously in the hallway.
I think he's pressurizing his containment suit.
But okay, so we're just going to go and leave you guys with. There's always music. There's always a piece that's relevant in one way or another. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going there. The lyrics are a bit outdated, I think, but the sentiment is what counts. We'll see you next week. OTW at 2600.com. Good night.
I say, what happened to your skirts and blouses? Why can't I man see you in your dresses? Cause these things aren't to judge and not pleases. And every day them are worshipping vanities. And your greatest lust is jewelries. Mind y'all lick you with diseases. Hey, mind y'all lick you with diseases. Why, the most dangerous diseases. I said the most dangerous diseases. I'm talking like the elephantitis. The other one is the poliomyelitis. Arthritis and the one diabetes. You see, cause every day that I turn the Bible pages. From Proverbs forward to Genesis. From Revelation to Ecclesiastes. But let me tell you, say me wisdom increases. And the loss of the world, it decreases. While every day man I build explosives. The corruption of the world, it exposes. Mind jolly cure with diseases. Mind jolly cure with diseases. I said the most dangerous diseases. I said the most dangerous diseases. I'm talking like the elephantitis. The other one is the poliomyelitis. Arthritis and the one diabetes. You see, while the stars that shine from the galaxies, and it shines on human faces. Hear the cry of the Israelite voices, who once led by the man Moses. Jah, we need your advice. Hey, help us out of the crisis. Hey, Jah, we need your advice. Help us out of the crisis. You see, every day the girls dress up in their trousers. I say, what happened to your skirts and blouses? Why can't I man see you in your dresses? Cause these things aren't to judge and not pleases. And every day them a worshipping vanities. And your greatest lust is jewelry. Hey, Jah, you feel it them with diseases. Jah, you feel it them with diseases. I said the most dangerous diseases.
Oh, Lord.
I'm talking about the dangerous diseases.
Oh.
I'm talking like the elephantitis.
The other one is the poliomyelitis.
Arthritis and the one diabetes. You see, every day that I turn the Bible pages.
From Proverbs forward to Genesis.
From Revelation to Ecclesiastes.
But let me tell you, see, my wisdom increases.
And the loss of the world, it decreases.
Every day, man, I build explosives.
The corruption of the world, it exposes.
Mind your lick you with diseases.
Hey,
mind your lick them with diseases.
Hey, and you feel it them with diseases. Jah, you feel it them with diseases. I said the most dangerous diseases.
See it.
I said the most dangerous diseases. I'm talking like the elephantitis.
Yeah.
The poliomyelitis, arthritis and the one diabetes.
Yeah, yeah.
Feel it them with diseases.
Oh Lord.
And I don't go to no pleasant things for jotting them with the disease every day. You feel it them with diseases. Hey, go with the lip, right, lip, right. You feel it them